Case number 3-210042, People of the State of Illinois, Appellee versus Stephen R. Pymel, Appellant.
Ms. Taylor, you may proceed.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. I am Kelly Taylor from the Office of the State Appellate Defender on behalf of the appellant, Stephen Pymel. This is a direct appeal, and Mr. Pymel is appealing his conviction for aggravated criminal sexual abuse, for which he received a sentence of probation. There are two issues in the case. Number one, the jury acquitted Mr. Pymel of aggravated criminal sexual abuse when it found him not guilty, and the court's order that the jury return to the jury room to continue deliberating violated his right against double jeopardy. And number two, the court erred in admitting ZL's videotape statement from July 2019 pursuant to section 11510 because ZL was 14 years old at the time she gave that statement. The jury returned three not guilty verdict forms. They were all signed. The one at issue in this case reads, "We, the jury, find the defendant Stephen Pymel not guilty of aggravated criminal sexual abuse as charged in count two, alleging sexual conduct by the defendant touching the breasts of ZL." The verdict form was not ambiguous or confusing, and the jury was provided both the guilty and not guilty verdict forms. The juror signed an appropriate form acquitting Mr. Pymel of count two, just as they did for counts one and three. In Illinois, an acquittal in a jury trial is defined in 720 ILCS 5/2-1 as a verdict or finding of not guilty of an offense rendered by a legally constituted jury. A legally constituted jury found the defendant not guilty, acquitting him of the aggravated criminal sexual abuse charge. When the judge was reading all the verdict forms, the jurors expressed concern with as count two was being read. Luckily, this issue is not a common one because this appears to be a case of first impression in Illinois. The jurors are tasked with the extremely important decision of deciding whether a defendant is guilty or not guilty. It should be a given that they read the verdict forms before they sign them. In contract law, you cannot negate the terms of a contract by stating that you didn't bother to read it before you signed it. The Supreme Court of the United States has stated that a mistaken acquittal is an acquittal nonetheless. In Illinois, there is no reconsidering an acquittal, mistaken or otherwise. The state cannot file a motion for new trial. The state cannot ask for a judgment notwithstanding the acquittal. The state cannot appeal a not guilty verdict. And the state cannot even poll jurors to ask them whether not guilty was and is still their verdict. These safeguards in favor of defendants align with the well-known doctrine that it is better that 10 guilty persons escape than that one innocent person suffer.
Ms. Kelly, may I ask you this question?
Yes.
Or I will ask you this question. People versus Almo, Supreme Court case, it seems to focus on when it becomes a verdict.
So
we have, a finding of the jury was read by the court on, and allegedly it was a mistake. At least no one on the jury said otherwise. So is this just a finding, but it's not a verdict at the point in the trial that this happened?
Well, the statute is pretty clear that the verdict is a finding of not guilty rendered by a legally constituted jury. If the statute intended for a verdict to not be official until a judge said it was, then that would be in the statute. Also, in that
Well, was that statute in existence when the Supreme Court in Alamo decided that case?
Looks like effective 1962.
And Alamo was a 1985 case.
So I think that anything extemporaneous that the court did or says is extemporaneous. And also Alamo has to do with inconsistent verdicts. Here, it wasn't legally inconsistent. There was no reason to believe that the jurors made a mistake at the time that the verdict forms were signed. Alamo says that it has to be, it's the court's, in Alamo, the trial judge received the verdicts and upon reading them realized that the convictions of murder and voluntary manslaughter were inconsistent in both form and substance. Whereas in this case, there's no reason, especially as the judge was reading it, to think that it was inconsistent in form or substance, especially when the other two verdicts were not guilty as well.
So you're saying that a jury cannot correct itself once it comes into the courtroom and the foreman passes on a form to the judge?
When it acquits? No. If the jury were, like for instance, when the jury is polled and the jury can only be polled by the defendant, at that point, if they're, if a juror says, that's not my verdict, I was coerced, there are avenues for the defendant to have some recourse there in the form of the judge can do a judgment notwithstanding the verdict, new trial, things like that. But for an acquittal, all the protections benefit the defendant, that's it. Once even a mistaken acquittal is still an acquittal, as it was here.
Okay.
And then even this court in People versus King in 1974, the state there argued that it was manifest necessity and the ends of public justice that the court's verdict, the court found that two of the four verdicts were inconsistent and took it upon himself to declare a mistrial in that case in King. And this court said, no, I mean, by necessary implication, neither any end of public justice nor manifest necessity would or should authorize the declaration of a mistrial after a verdict of acquittal has been returned by a jury. So even in that case where the judge said, hey, these are legally inconsistent, this court, the third district court, still found that no, the jury acquitted on two of those four and those two should have stayed in acquittal.
When did you say that was?
Pardon me?
When did you say King was decided?
1974.
So that was before the Supreme Court decision in Alamo?
It was, but Alamo's, they're still there. They deal with the inconsistent verdicts. And in our case, there was no inconsistent verdict. It was an acquittal. And per statute, it should have remained an acquittal.
Well, I'm having a little trouble with your analysis here. It seemed fairly straightforward in Alamo. The finding of a jury does not become a verdict until it has been received, accepted by the court, and entered of record. Was that the case here?
That's what, but still, for it to be inconsistent with the statute, it should still be in favor of the defendant. The statute says no more than that once the verdict once the jury has returned the verdict, which it did here. Elmo just, I mean, that's, it's like excessive, and it's not in favor of the defendant. Once acquitted, as Mr. Plymel was here, he cannot again be placed in jeopardy. And the court violated his rights against double jeopardy when it ordered the jury to return to the jury room and continue deliberating. For these reasons, Mr. Plymel respectfully requests that this honorable court reverse his conviction for aggravated criminal sexual abuse. The court also erred when it admitted ZL's out-of-court statement from July 2019 because ZL was 14 years old when she gave that statement, and Section 115.10 no longer applied. The state concedes that ZL was 14, but instead argues that the defendant was not prejudiced because the evidence was not closely balanced, nor was there a credibility contest. However, the jury here would beg to differ. If there was no credibility contest, the jury would have accepted ZL's word and convicted Mr. Plymel on all three counts. ZL's story changed a few times. Mr. Plymel and his wife had just had a conversation with ZL and her mother, LL, about them decreasing their financial assistance. And LL complained to Officer Keene that Mr. Plymel was giving them no more rides or help. And this was after LL learned about the alleged abuse. So also, the Child Advocacy Center interviewer said that ZL was more relaxed during her July 2019 statement that she gave. And that's probably because she had another opportunity to tell her story without being cross-examined. Repetition of testimony in the form of prior consistent statements presents the danger that a jury will be over-persuaded as to its truth. The jurors heard ZL's recounting of the acts alleged in count two, first when she gave her trial testimony, then during the 2017 video interview, and then again during the inadmissible 2019 interview.
Are there inconsistencies in all three of those hearsay statements?
Between which counts?
Well, you're saying I'm just saying in the interviews or statements.
As to the other acts, there were inconsistencies. The acts contained in count two here, she was fairly consistent between the three interviews, which is why this third interview has the danger of really reinforcing the jury hearing this prior detailed consistent statement and bolstering her trial testimony.
Isn't it clear that the jury rejected this 2019 video as to count one? Because I clearly found him not guilty of count one.
Correct, Your Honor. Count one had changed, that had changed drastically over the three videos. Count two remained somewhat the same, and the danger of the jury hearing count two for the third time in this relaxed environment, it was just a great, especially in such a close case here, there's just that danger that it really bolstered the trial testimony and swayed them on the count two.
It doesn't seem like it would have had that effect since they rejected it. I mean, they found him guilty on the only thing that she added in that July statement.
With the case being this close, though, I think it's impossible to say that something did not impact the jury one way or another. Case law that says there has to be an affirmative showing that it did not prejudice or impact the jury. And here it definitely could have, considering that it was another detailed prior consistent statement in a laid back environment with a laid back with no cross examination, really giving the jury that the chance to hear that again. Think my light is on. So this,
yeah, you will have time in reply.
Okay. This honorable court should therefore reverse defendant's conviction and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Ms. Theodorados.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. My name is Jessica Theodorados and I represent the people. First, double jeopardy was not implicated here because there was never a judgment entered acquitting the defendant of count two. It's quite a stretch to call the jury immediately informing the court that an improper form was turned over prior to the judgment being entered a violation of double jeopardy. Double jeopardy only applies to situations where the defendant is unequivocally acquitted and there is a final ruling of guilt. Here, the court read the form for count two as not guilty, which was the charge that alleged that defendant sexually touched the 12-year-old's breasts, and the jury looked befuddled, and a jury member immediately spoke up and said, "That's not right." Both the state and the defense agreed to poll the jury. Every member of the jury said on the record that not guilty was not their verdict for count two. So the court sent the jury members back to return the right form. The jury found defendant guilty of count two, as was their intention from the beginning, as was sorted out before a judgment was entered by the court and defendant was acquitted. At the time of the jury form debacle, no final ruling had occurred. When the jury returned the form that they intended, which found defendant guilty, it was merely a correction of a clerical error. Defendant was not subject to additional persecution and no final judgment had been made on the determination of his guilt. This is not a situation where the forms were read and the jury was sent back to deliberate more or discuss the evidence against the defendant. The jury was polled for the record, explicitly provided that they wanted to find defendant guilty of count two, and then they just remedied their clerical error. This cannot in any conceivable way be considered to have violated the bar against double jeopardy. The case law is clear. There needs to be a judgment of acquittal entered by the court to trigger double jeopardy. Before the jury's verdict is accepted by the court, and the judgment is entered and final, the jury can correct mistakes they make when filling out the verdict forms. I do believe that Almo is directly on point because it discusses that a judgment is not final in the interim of after a jury returns the verdict forms and before the court accepts the verdicts contained in the forms. In Almo, a jury returned the verdict forms finding the defendant guilty of both murder and manslaughter. So the trial judge sent the jury back to re-deliberate with more instructions. Then the jury returned the verdict of not guilty, of guilty for only murder. And if the trial court receiving verdicts and sending the jury back to with more instructions that end up changing the jury's decision would not implicate double jeopardy, double jeopardy should not be implicated in a case like this. So therefore, the people respectfully request that this court affirm defendant's conviction on the basis that he was never acquitted of count two. Second, defense counsel was not ineffective for failing to object to the admission of the recorded video statement that the victim gave when she was 14. Because it's very obvious that defense counsel could have been employing sound trial strategy for not objecting to the 2019 video on that basis, because he wanted to claim it.
What would that be?
That the victim was unreliable. Defense counsel objected to the 2017 videos on the basis that the child had motive to lie and was unreliable. So by excluding this 2019 video where the victim comes up with an additional accusation and discloses a different type of abuse, it was reasonable for defense counsel to argue that, to try to show the jury that the victim was upping the ante, as he called it, against the defendant and was therefore unreliable. So this could fall under a sound trial strategy.
So this was actually argued by the trial counsel.
Trial counsel did argue for the exclusion of the 2019 video on the basis that the child was unreliable and lying.
Yeah, but I mean before in trial.
I believe in arguments, it just was more of a vague unreliable. I don't think that the 2019 interview was directly attacked.
Isn't that a problem?
Perhaps, but I don't believe that this case.
How could that be trial strategy?
Well, I think that it could have, the defense counsel could have wanted the inclusion of this video where the victim is older and is making different accusations than she had made initially. So if there's two prior consistent statements and then one that is inconsistent, that could help the defense's case.
And so this was argued vigorously before the jury, right?
No, I wouldn't say vigorously.
Was it argued?
I do believe it was argued in some way. And under
some way, in some way.
There is the strong presumption that counsel was not professionally, was not acting professionally incompetent. So this court could find that trial counsel was not objectively unreasonable for not objecting on this basis. But if this court does find that it was error to not object on the specific basis of the victim being too old to testify under the statute, ultimately it was harmless error given all the other evidence presented, including the victim's two earlier recorded statements, the victim's testimony on the stand, the victim's mother's corroborative testimony, testimony by law enforcement, and the three other victims testifying relaying similar stories of abuse.
But not a single one of those people testified to any penetration.
No, and the defendant was not found guilty of penetration.
I'm sorry?
The jury didn't find defendant guilty of penetration. The jury only found defendant guilty of fondling the child's breasts.
Right, but the question is whether the statement was improperly admitted. And
the 2019 video.
You're saying that there's corroboration for it, and therefore it was okay, but there was no corroboration for the only thing that was added in that July statement.
I just believe that the timeline of events was corroborated and the victim testified to that information at trial too, which is corroborative. But ultimately,
that's not the important factor from that statement, is it? The timeline is not the critical factor that statement adds. What it adds is an allegation of penetration.
Right. That the jury found unreliable and ultimately didn't impact their decision of finding the defendant guilty of the acts alleged by the victim. So I don't believe that it would affect his being found guilty of count two just by the inclusion of the 2019 video. I think that this would absolutely fall under harmless error. There was a wealth of evidence that put the defendant in the story that the state was trying to present, that, and he himself admitted to mistakenly touching his niece's breast twice. And his version of events was that the 12-year-old was lying because defendant and his wife told her that they didn't want to keep spending money on her. I don't believe that this would fall under a situation of being closely balanced. And the jury only found defendant guilty of count two, which was the fondling of the breasts. And the 2019 interview provided the additional information about the oral abuse. So it's very unlikely that the 2019 video statement impacted the jury's decision. Even if it was error for trial counsel not to object on those specific grounds of being the age of the victim, the evidence presented, I believe, weighs very heavily in favor of the people's version of events and would not qualify as closely balanced, that one of the recorded statements would have affected the outcome of trial as it came to count two.
So the defendant's only found guilty of one count of aggravated criminal sexual assault?
That's correct, related to fondling of the victim's breasts. Okay. And that's all I have today. Are there any other questions I can answer?
But you agree that it was plain error.
It would be harmless error if this court finds that it was not within sound trial strategy to warrant it.
But plain error is because there was no objection made by defense counsel, right?
Well, he objected on different grounds on the basis of it being unreliable.
Okay. Any questions from the court further? I believe there are none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Taylor, you may reply.
Thank you. So, we've been back and forth on Elmo quite a bit, but I just want to say that I think Elmo just is not, it's not really on point here because of the legally inconsistent verdicts. The court pointed out that the trial court had no choice but to send the jury back because of the two competing verdicts of murder and voluntary manslaughter. Whereas here, there was no competing verdicts, and they were in form and substance, the not guilty acquittal was proper. It was rendered by the jury under the statute, and nothing more than that is required. Also, as to the second issue, I don't believe that this was trial strategy, considering defense counsel did attempt to keep that 2019 video out. And even if it were somehow counsel strategy for the jury to hear the new change statement, she did testify to the new information at trial. So the jury was going to hear it, the differing statements one way or another. And the 2019 statement definitely was not necessary for the jury to hear that and for him to make the argument that the witness was unreliable. I just also would like to point out that in People versus EZ, if I cited to, the court, it's a second district case, but their trial counsel objected to a 115.10 video for a different reason. And the court still considered it on the basis that the victim was too old and did not qualify under 115.10. So I think there's a number of ways that this court can reach the issue. Even if it was objected to on slightly different grounds, the court can still reach it, or as discussed under plain error or ineffective assistance. I also still think that it was, the 2019 video introduced a different act than the one Mr. Plymouth was ultimately convicted on. There is that longstanding principle about prior consistent statements just being a problem in swaying the jury, especially in a really close case that we have here. So I think I hit my points. And Mr. Plymouth respectfully requests that this court reverse his conviction for aggravated criminal sexual abuse outright. And in the alternative, he respectfully requests that the court reverse his conviction and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Any questions from the court?
No.
Well, thank you, counsel, both for your arguments in this matter this afternoon.